Saxophone Quartet. That was Hamiet Blewett's composition titled I Heard That. The Saxophone Quartet included, of course, Hamiet Blewett, Julius Hemphill on alto sax, as well as Oliver Lake on alto sax, David Murray on tenor sax as well. Several of them have died, but I love their music. And I like listening because they were just so, you know, they were so spontaneous. And yet it sounded spontaneous, but of course they did quite a bit of composition work. This is from their 1988 album, and I thought I would share that with you today. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and, you know, I did a lot of thinking the last couple of days about the state of affairs with us, the people. We really don't know. Let me put it this way. I feel more and more distant from the apparatus of government, even though I know they can put their hands on us and our minds at any time they choose. But I think I'm becoming more and more convinced about this notion of digging deeper into this idea of self-reliance, of survival, of trusting what we're seeing, trusting what we're knowing, and beginning to learn. And understand that we are in a moment that we better be really clear about, because it's only going to go downhill from here. What is that moment? The moment is this relationship between government and the people. There is a sense, and it's more and more pervasive, I think, that people are not trusting government. There's greater and greater disdain for government. And this is a two-sided thing. Government has been expressing open contempt and disdain for the people, how stupid we are, how easily fooled we are, and how weak we are in the face of the awesome power they have on their side to do whatever it is they want to do. Because systems have broken down to such a degree as to be almost useless to us in this idea that we have that we're resisting and fighting. And we're seeing more and more the globalizing of this attitude. It's not just in the United States anymore. You find more and more governments are beginning to see the logic of coming together to fight the common enemy. And the common enemy that they have, that's us. That's us. We're in the way. Unless, of course, we are living in a time when these things are just being reported on in greater detail or more frequently. And so we have a feeling that the world is getting smaller. And as it gets smaller, we can't help but discern the sides of the fight. You know, it used to be that the world was so big, people could hide their hands. They can do a lot of really dirty and evil things, and it wouldn't be discovered for a long time. But now we're beginning to learn things far more quickly. We're beginning to see things far more clearly. And we're beginning to understand that it isn't really all that complex. It is pretty much, it's a fairly simple thing to understand in the when you take it in the big sense of the word. You can see the dynamics are usually so simple, even though the impact is so enormous. What they're planning and what's in store for us that we probably don't know. As we speak, thousands of people are making their way up the corridor through several Central American countries and South American countries, and working their way to the U.S.-Mexico border. They are staging yet another, what is called a caravan, just a long line of people, masses of people, moving toward the U.S. border. Well, gee, you'd say, well, look, you've gotten a lesson. The United States has snatched your children and separated parents and their children, put them in internment camps in the hot desert, taking their time to process them against international law, by the way. And some of them they are not even bothering with. They just regard them as the discards. But they still come. They're still marching toward the U.S.-Mexican border to dramatize this idea that the United States has to accept responsibility for the fact that not only so many people are living in abject poverty and in such violence. The position of the United States, of course, meaning Trump, is that they brought all of this on themselves. They are prone to violence, so their societies are violent. They are accustomed to poverty, so poverty is not a new phenomenon. And in any event, they are supposed to be masters of their own fate. What does the United States have to do with the fact that people are living way below the poverty level, living in societies where violence is routine, and they are running quickly out of hope? Why is that our problem? Why is that something that the United States should consider uniquely a U.S. problem? And so Donald Trump has threatened, you can march all you want, but bear in mind that if we, that's the U.S. we here now, if we feel threatened, we'll just cut off your aid, make life doubly or triply worse. He said it, and he meant it, but that still is not a solution now, is it? It's not a solution. But the United States has never really been about solutions, and certainly not this president. There's no solution if it involves thinking and planning and talking with people and trying to work in conjunction with our neighbors to find out what's the best course to to take out of a problem so it doesn't get worse. You know, this is not the attitude of the president, and it has trickled down. It's not the attitude of Congress. It's not the attitude of his advisors. It is simply that the United States can turn off the tap and pretend and, in fact, carry on as if you weren't even there. We don't care whether people are dying in your country or starving in your country. We don't care whether you have good employment. We don't care whether you have good housing. We don't care whether your children can read. All we care about is you cross that border and it's war. But on the other hand, you have to say, well, when we think about this, what is the best approach here? Should the United States take the position, well, we are going to call a meeting of all the countries concerned in the region. We're going to have a regional convention of some sort, and we're going to try and figure this thing out because it's not ending. It's not going to end. Do you have any idea what might be a good approach here? How do you tackle this question about migrants and immigrants and the right of countries, including the United States, to say, basta ya, meaning enough already? We just can't handle the sheer volume of the displacement. We can't handle it. And certainly we can't handle it alone. So I'm putting this question to you. It's the first of our questions today. What is a sensible, in your mind, what is a sensible approach to this question? On the one hand, you can't ignore the fact that the U.S. has great responsibility in so many ways for the eventual disaster that we are witnessing today in all of these destabilized countries. On the other hand, you have to appreciate the fact that from the view of the administration, they're not going to approach this as a regional problem. And if it is, the United States would exempt itself from the region in terms of planning. Is there some rational way that this problem could be approached? Or do you feel as I do, that it will blow up? It will come to a point of major conflict. It will not end well. Share your thoughts on this and then we move on. 888-874-4888. It's a number to call to. We're tackling a couple of subjects bit by bit. This is the first one we're starting out with because I think it is going to be very serious indeed. And the reason I start with it is because we have all of the elements of a classic confrontation. You have a lot of power, awesome power on one side. You have no power on the other side, right? you only have people. You have the sense of justice on one side, and you have a sense of outrage about the fact that people have a sense of want justice on the other side. This is crazy. And it has nothing anymore to do with geography. The lines have already been blurred. What is happening between U.S. and the U.S. and Mexico and Honduras and Guatemala and other Central and South American countries has already begun to unfold in other parts of the world. And we see that it has come to no logical conclusion. And if it were to deteriorate even more, we know who will suffer the most. So, your thinking is what? What should happen now before it's really, really, really too late? Do you have any ideas? What should happen in the United States? What should happen regionally? What should happen internationally? Because this is an international problem, the problem of, they call them migrants. But they can be called other things. Dispossessed people, super exploited people, people whose land and opportunities have been taken away by more powerful countries without any force, any mediating force that says to the powerful countries, look, you overstepped your boundaries here, you're breaking international law, and we have to try something to ameliorate the situation while we still have the opportunity to do something within our power. What do you think? 888-874-4888. These are the kinds of questions we'll be pursuing because we haven't really talked about it. They've told us what they're going to do. They told us what ought to be done. But we the people, we haven't talked about it. It's as if it's not even on our radar screen. We are at such a distance. You know, we get to know these stories by reading them in the newspaper, see them on TV, or you get them through other electronic media, but we're not feeling the closeness of the problem. Jeff from New Jersey, what are your ideas? Hello, Jeff.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Well, for what we've been talking about last couple of weeks and a couple of calls have called in, is about the self-sufficiency. That should be the plan. As a nation, the people of the nation, of the United States, we should demand that our government not participate in drug dealing, which is the CIA. We should not participate in other people's elections, which is outright coming from our State Department. And that we should allow the people of those countries to be able to elect their own officials because we are, in a large part, responsible for deforestation. We're in a large part responsible for the exploitation of their resources. We are in large part responsible for getting rid of their democratic leaders and electing people who, strangely enough, look European and not anything like the slave or indigenous population that usually occupies a lot of South America. So we should allow, if we allow them to govern themselves, they would not be coming here to, because they're rich in resources, they're rich in land, they would not be coming here to work in factories for $10 an hour or whatever it is. So if we want to stop the migration, and that's one of the things, that, you know, if we want to stop migration, then we need to demand that our government stop meddling in their affairs. That's one for us. Number two is...
Let me hold on for a second. When you make a demand like that, how do you back it up?
You back it up by not sending your children to war. Every gun that we have, with the exception of the drones, even they have controllers. There's a person behind it. So that person can decide what it's going to do or not. That's a problem. That's the, that will be the problem with having artificial intelligence do these things. It's because they won't have a conscience. Right? So we need to get make sure that our sons and daughters are morally, and they understand the workings of the world. So they understand that there's an injustice to go down and assassinate a democratically elected leader in a country and reclaim over for democracy. You know, they elect a leader, we just deal with them on that term because that's who their people wanted, not who we wanted. If we do that approach and we educate these new soldiers coming in on the Constitution, what really is, what are they really supposed to be defending? Who are they really working for? Then they will then have a conscience to, and maybe be able to make a decision to do what's right or what's wrong. And we should, you know, the one thing we really need to do is get control of the media, because they're largely responsible for the attitudes that we have this right to go in and do this, and that it's in our best interest to go in and do this.
But so, keep in mind, Jeff, they're already, there are masses of people in this caravan, literally walking their way to the border. What do you propose as a workable plan between now and when they in fact reach the border?
Well, actually, I would, if it were me, up to me, I would sit down and talk with the leaders and tell them to take that caravan and march to the capitals of your countries. Take that caravan and march to the local places, and you're going to have to, you know, it's your land. Fight for it. You know, coming here is the whole march of a caravan and a walking, and it's like protesting here. If it's not producing legislation, if it's not producing a change, if it's not hurting them economically, then it's kind of pointless. Right? What is a marching of a caravan? It's going to draw attention to the plight, yes, but what will it change in the plight? You know, and with the way the media is, it's going to, of course, spin it to our current president's base and spin it towards these people want to come in our country because we're so great. Right? But the focus should be on maybe even going to the international courts and drawing attention to our interference in their government. And making put the campaign on the web, which is the saving grace of all this. Because I said a long time ago, I said that you know, the internet would be the curse because of all the things it could influence, but it would also be the blessing, because here's how the world got smaller. Because in real time, we could see what was going on in other places, and this is not by accident. It's definitely by design.
Do you think the average American? Do you think the average American really cares?
Yes.
Does the average American know what are the major points here, and how they are to read it?
No, I don't think it's. I think the average American cares, or would care, if they had the points. That is a problem. Since our media has been hijacked by six companies who have a vested interest in exploiting countries and their resources, you know, people like, the fan people, you know, the appliance people, those folks go around and They're working with the IMF to get these loans, to build these power plants that only the rich will use in the country. And then, of course, it has to be paid for, and the poor say are sacrificed. So those are the poor that are coming up here because they don't have their food, they don't have their resources, they don't have their health care, et cetera. So those are the ones that are coming to America. The average American would care because they would understand that it can happen. They could see how it is also happening to them. And they would care what was going on in the world if we had a news media outlet that on a major network or a major news media that would tell these stories. Now, we have things like PRN and different things on the website, but not everybody can get to them, especially in America, you know, or they know about them or have time about it. You watch your news at night, none of this is reported. None of the dots are connected. They don't even talk about climate change. So how are we supposed to care about something when we're not educated on it or at least given the information to decide for ourselves? But I think that the average American, just like I don't believe the average American would have voted for Donald Trump. We have some, but I know they stole that election. So and that's part of the plan, too, so you don't have faith in your neighbor. So that we remain separated or remain at talking points, you know, racially divided, class divided, regionally divided, so that we can remain that way. Because if we ever came together, and I beg to differ, it's awesome power on one side and there's awesome power on the other side. Because when people get together and decide that they're not going to do something, there's not going to be anything that the few at the top are going to be able to do to help to control it. Once we begin to have our own information, that's where, again, I think we're going to have to get into or have to have alternative news, an alternative news on a wide variety. And I think people are coming to that. I see that the spirit that's going around, not the spirit, but a consciousness, an awareness of really what's going on in the world. These things is coming slow, but more and more people are getting it. We just don't know that more and more people out there are like that. But it's all about the information. I just believe that when people are good in their heart in general, they've been made to feel evil or to feel less, and therefore they sometimes try to make other people less than what they are. But everybody is the same, good and evil. You know, even if they say good and evil, you still love your children. You still want the best for them. You still want to live a happy life. You want to laugh instead of cry most of the time. And that's just the general thing across, you know, across the board. But if we don't have the right information or being fed propaganda, then it's very, very hard to look across someone different from you. And, you know, you have a narrative in your head that they want what you have. They're coming here to get what you have. They're coming here to take your jobs. If that's the narrative that you're being fed, then it's real hard to accept people that come in and see them as really human beings rather than thieves. You know, so
thank
it's
you,
really
Jeff,
about how we educate each other.
Thanks for your thoughts today, Jeff, and thanks for getting us started. Hopefully it would inspire other people to take another look at the story and to consider what is unfolding before our eyes, and what I think is destined to be a major story with us, all of us. We are going to be affected because this thing is going to blow up, and we have to be prepared for the fallout. Thank you so much for getting us started. The other story I wanted to talk about, and I'll just lay it out to you this way. I call her very sarcastically Mother Dear. That's Nancy Pelosi, who pretty much heads up the Democratic Party. And over the weekend, in one way or the other, she managed to communicate that this is not the time to talk about impeachment. This is the time, she says, that the Democratic Party ought to be focusing on more practical and pragmatic matters, such as infrastructure, building and rebuilding the infrastructure. The party ought to be talking about how do we look way beyond in the future, and what should the party be doing to reconstruct itself to meet not only current demands, but future demands. But it should not be talking about impeaching this president. Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Is Nancy Pelosi right? Does she know something that we don't know? That this is not the time to talk about impeaching the president? Or is her position itself indicative of something that's going on within the Democratic Party and certainly within her head? What do you think? 888-874-4888. Do you agree that this is not the time to talk about impeachment? Do you agree that this is time for the Democratic Party to come together on other goals that would impress more its the constituencies that are looking to the party for leadership, especially in the arena of economics, or jobs, and better way of life? And this is not the time to have fights and quarrels over the president's conduct in office and even before it. What do you think? Is Nancy Pelosi right? 888-874-4888. I don't see any takers. How come everybody's getting so tame all of a sudden? You're a brave lot. Take a chance. Let's hear what you're thinking and see if people agree or disagree with you. That's the whole point. If we don't do this, it means that we don't engage with each other. And we may not learn as much as we can or need to that could come right out of this exchange of ideas. So Nancy Pelosi is up next. Does she have a good point? Or is she, by taking this position, is she saying something about the state of affairs within the party, whether it has the wherewithal to fight? Or is she saying strategically it's not going to be a good move? The matter right now is to instead concentrate on things that motivate voters, such as a jobs plan and a housing plan and a health plan, and that the Democratic Party should get busy about that and not about impeaching the president. What are your thoughts? 888-874-4888. My, we're very shy today. I'm very surprised that we have no takers for this particular question. All right, so I'll leave it right there and move on to a third question. Oh, we have some people, some brave souls calling in. Let's see who is up. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the Nancy Pelosi question. What do you think?
Yes. Hi, Utrice, and good afternoon to the family out there. I feel like back in the third grade again, when nobody in the class was putting their hand up, and I was always the one who put my. but anyway, I'm sure there will be other callers. But regarding Ms. Pelosi, I think she's got something on the right mark there. Right now, there has to be focus in the Democratic Party and those who who have like mind and support of those causes. And it's really now time for unification and focus and strategy. Donald Trump will take care of himself. He's going up like a Roman candle. And so he will flame out. And he gets more extravagant with his craziness each day, such as the Saudi thing and so forth. But between his flaming out and Mr. Mueller, he will be handled. Right now, the Democrats need to really focus on 2020 and finding the right leadership, finding the right coalitions to come together to begin some type of redress of this nightmare that we've been going through.
Well, I see you very deftly bypassed 2018, the elections of this year.
Well, yes, I have some trepidation about what people are doing, some overreach in terms of their expectations. I hope that things will turn for the Democrats in the House and even in the Senate. However, I just can't go out on a limb and be crestfallen and heartbroken like I was in 2016 when the reality of Donald J. Trump happened. And also, I don't see any real unification going on with the party, with the Democrats, in terms of really getting some energy out there. We're just, it's like fourth and goal. We have like literally a few weeks, and there's no real energy anywhere. And so I'm somewhat, you hear that there's supposed to be this blue wave, but, I don't see it.
I don't see it either. But you got us started on the question, and Patricia is up next, right after you. Hello, Patricia, how are you?
Hi, good afternoon, you, Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Now, Thank you.
I tend to do what most people don't. So whenever there's a town hall, I go. And recently, I was able to attend the town hall of my local senator and my local congressman. Now, the local congressman was literally just a week ago today. And I asked him a question just about the direction of the Democratic Party. And one of the questions that came up was, what about the question of impeachment? He was my local congressman was asked that question directly. And his response was that he did not support impeachment, and that the reason he didn't support it was because you have to, before you ask the question, before you enter that that arena, you have to make certain that whatever support Trump has, that his constituency would agree after the fact that this was totally and absolutely necessary. And I sat there in absolute amazement to his response to this question. You know, I also asked the question of, punishing Democrats who don't stand in line with the party line. And I specifically asked him a question about Joe Manchin, who voted for Kavanaugh. I said, well, now is he going to be punished? And he was quite flippant when he said, no, he's not going to be punished. And so then he proceeded to go to the next question. So I persisted. I said, well, why? He said, because having the Democratic seat is more important than punishing him. So I then said, well, then why don't you run somebody against him the next time? He said, because the Democratic seat is more important than anything else. So, black and brown people have no way of, they really believe that the Democrats are in their corner, and they have no way to completely understand it unless you attend these town halls and you hear with your own lying ears that, in fact, you're not even on the agenda.
No, we're not. But what does this tell you about, this is the word from on high now, okay? This is no conjecture. This is right out of her mouth. She's saying this is not the time to discuss impeachment. We need to be doing other things. Do you find something odd about the timing of her statement, and that is a direction in which she would take the position as the head of the party handing down or handing out an edict?
Well, number one, the fact that my local congressperson said that means that the Democrats, at least some of them, are falling in line with her edict. The fact that this continues, she didn't just say that. The fact that she continues, even after Green of Texas brought this up last year, the fact that she continues in this vein says that the Democrats really don't have the stomach to do what's necessary. They just don't.
Where does that leave people who are who identify themselves as Democrats, what does that leave them to decide?
They're up a creek without a paddle. They have no lifeline. They just don't know that they don't have a lifeline.
Wow. I hope they're listening, because these are some very heavy opinions. And to think that this was not rehearsed, I mean, we just started talking about these things in a casual form today. We didn't prepare for this discussion. It's just a matter of choosing topics that are in the mix. And this is how deeply people are feeling about it. So thank you, Patricia, for your call. Bill from Mount Vernon, how are you doing?
Hi, hiya, Trace.
Okay.
Yeah, good. I have the same opinion as the first caller. I believe the most important thing right now is Democrat unity, and to find out, you know, to basically get everybody in step, because the last time we had this whole controversy with Hillary knocking out Bernie and that whole, and most of us are still sore from that whole thing there. And we haven't healed those wounds, and we don't seem to have any plans to heal those wounds. Well, those wounds have to be healed if you're going to go in there and be able to fight in unity. I can't see any. First of all, if we get rid of Donald Trump, then we only have the vice president, and who's going to be a sane person, and they'll be able to push their policies much better, because Trump is such a fool that everything is always like nobody knows what the heck's going on at any time, because he has no direction, no principles, no values. But if you get somebody in there with principles and values, conservative principles and values, who knows how to play ball and play politics, they can get all kind of stuff against us. So I don't think it's a good idea, a pragmatic time to be talking about impeachment. Once you get in there and you see you have all your chips in line and everybody is together and you can get this thing across, then you do it. You don't do it on a whim and a prayer.
But, you know, here's the other side of the question. If the people are talking about impeachment, why is the Democratic Party taking the position out of hand that it is off? It is off the record. It's not even part of their discussion.
Because the Democratic Party realizes that the most important thing right now is to get the party in line. They don't have that. They don't have their heads together. You can't go into a war with half the troops feeling other than what the leaders feel. You have to lead and you have to follow it sometimes, and you have to know which is first. And the first thing to do is you have to organize your troops and make sure you have everything under control. They don't have everything under control. So when they go in there and they botch the job again, because they botched it last time, going after the wrong, putting the wrong things in order, not showing things, making sure that we can get things done. I mean, they botched it. So if you give these people the same control again and they goof up again, we'll lose a lot of the other people who are in the middle.
So that means that the Democratic Party stubbornly will not learn its own lesson. And number one in the lessons learned department is pay attention to what the people are saying.
Exactly. They totally.
Do you think that the Democratic Party has an idea of what the people are saying and feeling? I mean, when Congressman Al Green from Texas, remember, I ran the whole speech and everything, and I remarked, he was a very lonely man when he was talking about his articles of impeachment, and then he said, "This is the first set. I'm coming back with some new other." Reasons that we should be discussing impeachment of the president. There was nobody patting him on the back. There was nobody shaking his hand and congratulating him for the positions that he took, and that he actually sat down and wrote up articles of impeachment. So we have to question Nancy Pelosi's judgment in taking what I would believe to be a very undemocratic position. The Democratic Party is not listening to the Democratic constituency, in my opinion. I could be wrong.
but you have to do a poll. I think that if she were not being supported, you'd hear it. I mean, they'd be whispering about it or whatever. They know that this is not such an easy call to make. And only the Mavericks are going to get out there on one side or the other. The most of the group is going to try to stay on that middle line because that's where politicians, they stay. They stay in the middle line, not on the fence. The ones on the fence, they fall off. They're not supported. Even at the final analysis, Bernie had to step in line. And that's what politicians do. They step in line until they're sure that they have backing. No one is sure that they have the backing to get rid of Trump. So if that's not the case, why get out there? And besides, once they get in office, they can always go and do it anyway. But right now, it's not a good time to brag about the weapons. Even Donald Trump said, this is not. He said, you don't tell the enemies what you have in store for them. And you can't. We all want the guy out. Most of us want him out. But we want to make sure when we go after him that we get him. We're not going to let this guy get away with this, because if he do, he'll have another term in there. This is too important to mess up.
Well, the Democratic Party has never been afraid of messing up.
Well, I mean, when it comes, look, they're bought
messed
and paid
up
for
a lot.
I mean, aside from being bought and paid for, there are times when you lose that money if you don't play the game properly. And right now they have both the money to lose and the votes to lose, because if they go in there again and mess up, there are going to be more of those people in the middle who will not support them.
Well, I'm not beating you up. I'm appreciating the validity of your argument. I'm just asking, what does it say about the state of affairs with the Democratic Party, and in particular its leader, and the relationship between the leader, Nancy Pelosi, and this hierarchy within the Democratic Party, in which even those with constituencies that overwhelmingly favor a discussion on impeachment won't have it because Nancy Pelosi doesn't want it? What kind of a party is this?
Well, I think, again, I mean, I have to stay with the point that they're being politicians, and as such, you can't expect them to go out there on a line. And they're not sure of themselves. And I have to give kudos to Nancy, because she stepped out there and said it. And what we need in the leadership are leaders. She is a leader, and we need a leader. She's out there telling the troops, okay, come high or stay away. And they're all staying away because they can't come high. They're unsure of the public and what the public is going to support. I mean, we messed up, and we got this new Supreme Court guy in, throwing us back for God knows 100 years or more. From Obama messing up in a couple of ways. We can't keep doing these dumb things without having a caucus sitting down to discuss what are we doing and why we're doing it. Now, the one thing they can do is just get to Nancy and ask her, look, let me know what I can tell my constituency. Because they're not even doing that. Okay, look.
Look,
I'm
she's just
the
leader of the party. She's not the chief, you know, the czarina of the Democratic Party. She's just the head of the Democratic Party. Why hasn't the Democratic Party had the courage to say, this is a hard discussion and we're going to have it? We're going to have an exploration of the idea. You don't just get up and tell people you can't discuss this. What's the matter with her?
No, it's not the matter with her. What's the matter with them? She's the leader. That's her job, to stay out in front. And that she's doing that. And I applaud her for that. Now, if they're too much of a coward to go out there after her, hey, you know, put up or shut up.
All right, then. Okay.
Have a good day.
You defended yourself really well today. Real good. I love it. Thank you so much for calling in, Bill. E from Edgewater, I think you'll have the last say. This is going very well, I think. What are your thoughts? What is this situation where we have the leader of the Democratic Party saying this is not the time to discuss impeachment? We should be talking about other things. And miraculously, this is her edict that comes a couple of weeks before the midterm elections.
Right.
Good afternoon. I don't waste my time with this nonsense that's going on, to like watching Saturday Night 24/7. I thought we all understood that we had to live in a one-party system, and they're all playing a game on us. And if you don't have $100 million, you're not part of the club. And they're all playing this game on us. 30 years ago, when I read in the back of the Bible, in the Revelation, it said, when the trumpets sound, that'll be the sign. The trumpets are the children of Donald Trump. We have to fear people like Barron Trump and Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner and people like that. We're wasting our time.
You're off the topic. I need you to get back on track. Get back on track.
Back on track. Should we impeach Donald Trump? Of course we should.
No,
very logical.
Not should we impeach Donald Trump. That's not the question. Nancy Pelosi made it clear that this is not the time to discuss impeachment of Donald Trump. The question before us is, what does this indicate about the state of affairs within the Democratic Party, and what does it indicate more specifically about the leadership within the party of Nancy Pelosi?
It indicates that there is not a two-party system. It indicates that it's a one-party system, and they're all working together. And the system instructed them to do this, to keep us busy asking these questions that you're asking us. So while we're busy trying to figure it all out, they're going up to space and figuring out what they got to do. People need to understand that we're in a very troubling time here, and this is no joke. And it's far bigger than the Democratic and Republican Party.
And okay.
There was a time where there were some good politicians and good senators, and they were taken up on a helicopter ride and pushed out the door when they got like 200 feet up in the air. And then the next day on the news, they said a helicopter's crashed and this senator died and that senator died. That all happened back in the early 80s. We're in 2018. Big trouble. Watch out
all
for
right.
the trumpets.
Thanks so much for your call. Pete from Kingston, you're on the air. Hello, Pete. Okay. Lisa from New York, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Utrice. How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm getting very frustrated as to why we waste time on the Democratic Party. I agree with your last caller. The Republican Party and the Democratic Party are working together. I didn't hear Nancy Pelosi say this, but perhaps she realizes that there are many people who in the Democratic Party or who used to be in the Democratic Party and are progressives who don't support this focus on impeaching Donald Trump. I mean, he was democratically elected. As far as I can see, I don't believe any of the intelligence community and, you know, the whole Russia story. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. I never will vote for someone like Hillary Clinton. They're all interested in money, follow the money, the, you know, military industrial complex. That's what it's all about. And I think, I know the other day you spoke about what are the alternatives. There is a movement for a people's party, headed up by Nick Brana, who was working for Bernie Sanders, and the party has been endorsed by Chris Hedges, Cornel West. So, I mean, there are alternatives. But
okay,
I'm
but
frustrated
you didn't get
that
me get you didn't get close to the question. What does it say about the party?
Nancy, you know, I think that
incarnation,
ulterior motives. She must think that, you know, she doesn't have that unity within the party, and that maybe people like me really will not vote for Democrats if I keep hearing all this about, you know, impeaching Trump and, you know, the whole Russia story. You know, I want to hear about fighting police brutality. I want to hear about student loan forgiveness. I want to hear about better housing and Medicare for all. And they don't talk about that.
Excellent point. Excellent point, because that is, in fact, the flip side of what she said. Let's not talk about this business of impeachment. Let's, therefore, concentrate our efforts on the more practical things that people are looking for. Healthcare, infrastructure, employment, student debt. She's becoming quite practical about the issue, even though the constituencies that they represent want them also to talk about impeachment, which was why Congressman Green raised the matter, and he was all by himself. We made a note of that. Thanks so much, Lisa, for your comments today. Thank you all. We didn't get to all of our questions, which means tomorrow, more questions. So we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.